Hi, I'm Sammy Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
It was originally called Licht und Blindheit, which is German for light and blindness. It was released in March 1980 on the Sordide Sentimental record label.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, it's French. I'm practicing my French accent, can you tell? Only available in France, it was a limited edition of 1,578 copies, released on a 7-inch vinyl single featuring Dead Souls as the B-side. And following Ian Curtis's death, He was only 23. In May 1980, it was re-released as a 12-inch single by Factory Records that August, and then released again in 1988 to coincide with the release of the compilation album Substance, which reached number 7 in the UK album charts.
Right. Yeah. Well, the first thing we need to talk about that song is the toms. The tom-tom sound at the beginning is nothing short of stupendous.
Really?
Absolutely stupendous. And before I read the notes on this, I thought that this was recorded at Strawberry Studios because Martin Hannett, the producer, used to work a lot at Strawberry. And I know that studio, and I know the Helios console in there. And I thought, God, that's a Helios. It's got Helios written all over it. But no, I was wrong.
No, love.
This was recorded at Cargo Studios in Rochdale. Now, Cargo was on the first floor above a music shop. It was called Tractor Music. And it was a shithole. So much of a shithole that I recorded my first single there with the band Whitefire, titled Whitefire, which sounds very much like something you perhaps need some ointment to rub on, but no, it's that was the name of the band. And I remember going in there and recording that, and they had a Soundcraft in there, a Soundcraft console in there. And this is a Soundcraft console.
Yeah.
Not the mighty Helios, which goes to prove that it's the guy with the ears or the woman with the ears as opposed to the equipment that is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also in there, you will hear some chimes.
I know, I heard those.
Which are in Cargo Studios. And I've actually played them, those very chimes, which I didn't know about. And it's just quite remarkable. The guy who used to own it is a guy called John Brierley. And I'm looking right now at the 2-inch master tape from that session. I'm looking at it right now. And it's 2-inch, 16-track, which is the ultimate for recording drums. Because 2-inch, 16-track, Vinnie Colaiuta himself reckons it's the best way to record drums. I reckon it's the best way to record drums because you get that sound. You can overload the tape and it sounds fucking great. Great, 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 great. But the song is fantastic. Just before his death. Unbelievably sad. Have you got any notes about the...
Did you know what they were called?
About the film?
Well, no.
Okay.
Oh, do you know what they were called before Joy Division?
Go on.
Warsaw.
No, I didn't know that.
And do you know what Joy Division actually comes from?
Go on. These are notes that are not in the notes.
I've got the secret notes that are handwritten so you can't see them right in front of me. Because this is what we do, Campbell.
Okay.
It's a challenge here. Mm. And I find this really exciting because it's like, Joy Division comes from, and it's a bit sad actually, it's quite a dark name, but it's the 1955, the House of the Dolls novel, and it's slang for the female concentration camp prisoners who were forced into prostitution by the Nazis.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
No.
That's absolutely fascinating. But I mean, you know, the whole band were pretty dark, and later on, I met with the band that, of course, became New Order. And I know the guys reasonably well, and Tony Wilson, Factory, and Rob Gretton, the manager, who was just as miserable. And I was reading something on 24-Hour Party People today.
Yeah.
Because Alan Partridge, actually, was in there. And he was did a piece in The Guardian this morning. I was reading about it. It was very interesting. But, you know, it really reminds me, this song, of my youth. Because when they recorded this in 1980, of course, I recorded the single, I think, in 1977.
That's really bananas, isn't it? It's a bit bonkers, all that, really. What I love about it, so I know Sophos, these guys formed a band in 1976 after they'd seen the Sex Pistols
like
play
the Buzzcocks.
Yeah, at the Free Trade Hall in Manchester. Mm. And I went to a gig, right, in Manchester just before they closed it and refurbed it. So my story is that I went to Salford Uni in 1990 to 92. And studied media and performance. And you were there, but you were there before me at the different campus. But the thing is that this Salford thing, you get to feel what it's like, the difference between the Salford and the Manchester scene.
Yeah.
And the edge and the attitude and that kind of, you know, and I used to go up to Tibbs Street in Manchester and you had Dry Barn Factory. I mean, I worked on In the City with Tony Wilson. I mean, in fact, the first time I met Tony Wilson, kind of met him, in that we were I was in the audience my first week in Salford, and he was presenting the late night news show, and he was asking just what the audience, you know, how, you know, questions, and I just put my hand up and said, "How'd you get your job?" Didn't know that he was this guy from Factory Records. I had no idea that Coronation Street was filmed in Manchester. I just went because I wanted to do the course. Seriously. But I kid you not. So I mean, there's all this history, and as you get to meet people, it's quite, there's a darkness, there's a definite darkness in Salford, and you've got that Salford Lads Club and all that thing. But there's an attitude as well of, there's something they've got up north that you can't find anywhere else. What is it?
Well, I don't know what it is. I mean, Salford, it's not a great place. I mean, over there, I haven't been back for years now. We went to Manchester City Centre, which was a bit disappointing a few years ago, didn't we? But Salford, you know, it was always run down. It was full of
ne'er-do-wells.
There's
something about the people. They didn't just say nothing. You knew where you stood with them.
Mm.
And you could see it, you know, I had to get streetwise, you know, like if someone asked you for the time, all that kind of thing with the big city and stuff, you never sort of talk to strangers particularly, but then you end up doing just that because you ask for directions. They don't just tell you where to go up north, up in Manchester and Salford. They walk you to the place
That's
that you're
right,
going
yeah.
to. They come
yeah.
out the shop, stop working, and they halfway yeah. get you down the road. And yeah. It was the most sense of community, having come from sort of Herefordshire, where it's more cold, and the further down south, I think it's a bit more cold. But what I'm trying to do is explain a little bit about how the communities, how this could have got into the music, you know, and the attitude of these guys, really.
Well, the film, which I would urge everybody to watch, Anton Corbijn directed it, and it's just absolutely amazing,
stunning
film. It's a great film, Betty and Curtis and his sad death and everything. But Ned Raggett is a friend of ours on Mastodon, and we've known him on and off for years and stuff, but he wrote for All Music, and he was talking about the record, and he said Atmosphere is another one of those prime Joy Division songs like Transmission or Love Will Tear Us Apart, where Martin Hannett's production becomes so essential to the end result that it couldn't have been heard any otherwise, you know? He also notes that with regard to Ian Curtis's mental state and subsequent death, there is a feeling of requiem here, an awesome musical farewell.
Chaise long.
Is your muffin buttered? Would you like us to assign someone to butter your muffin? Sounds very rude to me. I'm not quite sure. But apparently, this lyric came from, as a direct quote, from a 2014 comedy, Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
But we're not worried about Mean Girls. We're not talking about comedy. We're talking about Wet Leg, which is the band, and Chaise Longue, their debut single, released on the 15th of June 2021 from their eponymous debut album, released on British independent label Domino. 8th of April 2022. Recorded at Mr. Dan's. We don't know who he is yet. John McMullen Studio, Hester Chambers' flat, and Joshua Mobaraki's flat. Great name, incidentally. It's produced by Don Kerry, who also produced the fabulous Black Midi. Now, Black Midi, one of our favourite bands of 2022, check them out. But it was the first album we produced, Schlagenheim, and also Fontaines DC. Doggerel, which is, again, their first album. Again, something I think we're going to play over the next couple of weeks because they are a great band. Why are we playing this? What is it all about? Is it because they won the Grammy for Best Alternative Music Album and nominated for Album of the Year at the 2023 Brit Awards? No! We actually don't give a shit about that. You know, what we're interested in is the fact we like it. Because what happened the other day, I just put it on. Because we listen to new music every lots of new music every week, and I put it on, and I thought it's fresh, it's cool, and the vocal sounds like what does it sound like?
Hey you,
no
over there, on the chaise longue in your underwear.
It sounds like the Flying Lizards.
It does.
The best things in life
are free.
You can give it to the birds and beasts. I want money. Ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh. That's it. But the vocal, it sounds like, well, it sounds like the one from the Flying Lizards, in my opinion. But I love it. I love the fuzz guitar. I love the great energy in it. I love that little hook. It really, really great. And it's a great, great fun single. But what I do like, I do love the lyrics and the delivery. I think it's a really clever and alternative. We've all heard it all before. In reality, but many people know this. But, you know, for 2023, it sounds pretty original. What do you think?
What do I think? I love the space on that. I just like their delivery as well. They're very deadpan. Like, when I was doing the research on them, right, so you've got a lead singer and guitarist, Rhiannon Teasdale, and Hester Chambers, lead guitarist and backing singer. They met at music college at the Isle of Wight, and they formed at the start of the pandemic. And then they gigged for a bit. And she wrote the song, sat on Hester's grandfather's chaise longue. But what they were trying to do is something different. And what I like is that they don't take themselves too seriously. So there's a lot of stuff, for instance, like they were formed at the top of a Ferris wheel. I don't believe for one cornflake out of a packet. But I think they're fun. I think they're actually taking the mick out of everything. And it just feels comedic in a very deadpan kind of way. And that's what I like. It's very refreshing in that way. And I like the melody. I watched the video as well of Chaise Longue. Very good. It filmed at their parents' house. They just kind of improvised it. And Rhiannon used to be a stylist for commercials. So they had some nonce, you know, about how to do stuff. It's a DIY video. Love it all. I just love the fact they've done something fresh and everyone's just going, you know, even the kids, all the kids went viral, just love it. The kids are like shouting through the walls. Oh no, they're just, it's really easy as well for kids to pick up on that because it's a repetitive line. On the chaise longue, on the chaise longue. So you can really
And I think once people hear that, I think it just connected to all ages, including me, Susie Starlight, age 6 and a half.
Yeah.
the mighty Television and Marky Moon, the title track from their debut album released on February the 8th in 1977, ladies and gentlemen, on the Elektra record label, produced by Andy Johns. Primarily, he was invited to produce because he worked on Goat's Head Soup by the Rolling Stones, and the enigmatic, amazing guy, Tom Verlaine, and recorded at A&R Recording, Inc. in New York City, US of A.
Will these stars please, and they are stars because some of them are stars far as I'm concerned, stop dying? Under no circumstances anybody else got to die because we program our shows specifically, right? And all of a sudden they die and we've got to put these tracks in, right? So they've got to stop it. So everybody out there, yeah, we are getting fed up. So we must stop it immediately. Burt Bacharach this week as well. So next week we're going to put some Burt Bacharach. But let's talk about Tom Verlaine.
Tom.
You know, I've always loved it. I've always loved Television. I've got both the records on coloured vinyl. We still play them to this day. They are fantastic records. And what I love about Television, and certainly this track, there is no compression on it. Now, compare that with the Wet Leg track before, because we use, when we record here, we record on a digital audio workstation so we can actually see the waveform. And when you look at the Wet Leg track, it was a solid block. It's been compressed to fuck. It's like a bit
like
an elephant.
Elephant.
sat on the track. A very big elephant, actually. Not just a small elephant, but a very big elephant has sat on the track and squashed it. So that means that the highs are not high and the lows are virtually the same level as the, in terms of volume as highs. It's crazy. But this, if you notice, it breathes.
Yeah.
Right? And it builds up during the track and you don't get bored with it.
It's emotional.
It is. And I love his solos. I love virtually 11 minutes of that track. It's melodic. There's no distortion. It's just the distortion of the amp. It's very trebly. I think he's probably using a Fender Jazzmaster on that, you know. And I just love it. And what I do love about it, this is done in one take.
That's crazy shit.
One take, right? And Andy Johns just took it. No compression. They put some overdubs on afterwards. And you can hear the drummer. Because that's one thing about Slater. I've never been a great fan of the rhythm section. That's a different matter. But, you know, he does a fill in the middle and he falls over. He speeds up a little bit. Then Slater, but it all sort of, you know, jogs around and stuff. But, you know, the lyric's fantastic. His vocal, very enigmatic. His guitar playing is absolutely sensational. And the bass player.
It's called Fred.
That's right.
Fred Smith, because the previous guy was called Richard Hell.
Richard Hell. Voidoids.
Yeah, that so he left, enough, yeah. And then yeah. You got guitarist Richard Lloyd, and they had a rock and roll background, and this is where you got the fusion of influences. You got Billy Ficker, the drummer, who was a jazz guy, and then you've got Tom Verlaine, whose taste varied from the rock group 13th Floor Elevators, love it, to jazz saxophonist Albert Ayler. So you've got all these influences as well. And he was a prolific reader as well, Tom Verlaine. I've just been reading about him. But you know, I've got to say that there are very few guitarists that I love and that I really get. And when we first started working together, when we were recording my Starlight solo material, and you played a solo, and it was, to this day, it's in my heart because it's like, at one point your nickname was Verlaine.
It was
because you were so, and this is, you were just, I feel like you guys are like brothers, you know, inside your hearts. It's just so, I'm just so glad that he existed, you know, that he lived and he gave so much to his music. And just reading about how, you know, when he first started out, he turned down, you know, loads of record label offers like Island Records. He said, nope. And in late 74, Brian Eno had produced some demos. But you know what? Tom didn't like the way he made them sound because he thought it was too cold sound, too brittle sound. So story goes that Paddy Smith, who shared a residency at the iconic CBGBs in New York. Persuaded Hilly Crystal to give them a slot, and so they had a residency together. And Patti Smith recommended them to Clive Davis, the mighty Clive Davis at Arista. And Alan Lenier from the Blue Oyster Cult, who was Patty's boyfriend at the time, persuaded Clive to give the guys some time to record some demos. And he only accepted, Tom, if he could produce it. And that's when he got an Andy Johns as well, because he wasn't having anybody sort of like determine their sound. And it's just like, and I was just reading a story with Patty and how they met and how they used to hang out. And they looked at each other's bookshelves and they had almost exactly the same books.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they shared the same love of poetry and they used to go for walks together and they made up stories together. And she was talking about how they used to go and just lie on a mattress and just look at the sky. And, you know, and they just had a really, really amazing connection. And you can hear it in his music. He's just this amazing, almost otherworldly guitar player.
We
the new single by Karen Carpenter. Oh, sorry, no, it's the new single by Waze Blood. No, it's not a single at all, but it's off the album. It's not just me, it's everybody from her fifth studio album and In the Darkness, Hearts Aglow, released on the 18th of November 2022, recorded at Studio 3 at East West, Los Angeles. Now...
Yes, darling.
Yes, Karen Carpenter stinks, reeks of Karen Carpenter, but it's beautiful. Beautiful song, beautiful album, very, very well recorded, you know, a lot of great stuff. Produced by Natalie Mering, Ben Babbitt, Jonathan Rabo, or Rabo, who does The Killers, Father John Misty, and Rod, we call him Rod because we can't pronounce his name.
Well, it's R-O-D-A-I-D-H, so we think it might be Rody.
Yeah, well, Rody
Rod,
McDonald,
for sure.
He produced The XX, Hot Chip, The Horrors, Daughter, and Adele. So a big team on that. But
yeah,
she's changed musically quite a lot over the time that she's been around because, you know, it was in the early 2000s she really kicked off and she started into noise, didn't she? She had a lot of...
Well, this is the thing. So her name's Natalie Mering. She was born in California. And fascinating story. And it's an inspiration to every musician to keep going and keep... the heartbeat of your music going as well. So she grew up in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. She's been performing for nearly 20 years. So I love this, right? She was briefly a bassist of the Portland, Oregon-based group called Jackie O Motherfucker.
Mm.
And was the singer also for the band Satanized. And she just had loads of different albums out. But the one that really broke for her was that in 2019, there was an album called Titanic Rising. It was her first studio album released by Sub Pop. And I think this is the one that really everyone sort of connected with. And she had a TV debut on Late Night with Seth Meyers. She then opened for Kacey Musgrave. She sung with Lana Del Rey. And also, yeah, on For Free, you know, the cover of the Joni Mitchell song, which is David Crosby, For Free, the same song. It's amazing how our Joni gets around her songs in terms of the way that people connect with them. And I think that I was thinking about this Karen Carpenter thing as well, because I grew up with Karen Carpenter. She's one of my primary influences. And you can hear it when you can hear those, everybody, everybody, and all those sort of angelic harmonies. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. But you've got that kind of Kate Bush influence as well, and the Kinks sort of meeting World War II, or Bob Seger meets Enya. So you've got that kind of fusion of those influences. But she's just sublime. She's beautiful. Beautiful sound.
Her daddy got her big, her air, her friend, her mommy hung on, her family in cash, her beautiful clothes, her stay at the corner.
You're losing, you're losing, you're losing, you're gonna be seen.
can. They certainly can. Vitamin C, the second single release from their third studio album, Eggy Bamiyazi, which is, I know, don't make me laugh. It's Turkish for Aegean okra.
Blimey.
I know, Eggy Bamiyazi. It was released in 1972 on United Artists Records, produced by Can, and recorded at Inner Spaceman, the Germans.
Well, Can, you know, yeah, in terms of krautrock, they actually invented it. I think it was like a big thing going on at the same time, but it's an amazing record. I went to see Damo Suzuki in Liverpool a few years ago, and he's still totally
bonkers.
I love
his name.
Yeah, it's great. Great name. Really, really, really cool. And, you know, 1972, this does not sound like 1972.
No, it doesn't, does it?
If it sounded like, you know, 2021, then you could imagine
like
it.
Like the smile a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, the production's a bit more raw, but you get raw production now, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, with television in 1980, they didn't use any production values in terms of compression or anything like that on that record. And on this one, it's quite clunky, but it's just a great song. It's a great groove. It's great feel, you know. This is probably the most accessible track, but it's still totally amazing.
Well, they were formed in Cologne in 68, pioneers of the German krautrock scene, and it's all the fault of Ermin Schmidt, who plays keyboards, because he went to New York.
Schmidto.
In 1966, and he hung out with Steve Reich and Terry Riley, the Music Concrete guys. And he also discovered Andy Warhol and the Chelsea hotel scene.
Uh-oh.
And he says, the trip, corrupted me.
Yeah, well, you can imagine.
So can you imagine those influences and then coming back to Cologne and saying, right, okay, so they had a hit single with Spoon in 71. It went to number 6 in the German chart, sold 300,000 copies. I know what we'll do. We'll hire an ex-cinema and we'll go and we'll live there and we will make this album.
Is that right?
And that's how they made it, yeah. So all on the back, they put all their money into recording the album because they had a hit with Spoon because it was used with some German TV programme. Yeah, das ist sehr schön.
Renting at an old cinema, that is my dream.
I know, I'm thinking that too. Well, we love the Germans.
Well, the whole thing with Daniel Lanois and Teatro, when he actually bought that
of
cinema
course.
And recorded Willie Nelson there and Neil Young and stuff. In fact, the album's called Teatro, the Willie Nelson album. It's a great record. But that's what we need to do. Next, cinema.
Oh,
John Cale and Animal Collective, Everlasting Days, from Cale's 17th studio album, Mercy, released on the 20th of January 2023 on the Double Six record label. I love John Cale. I love his work in the Velvet Underground. I love the fact he's just such a diverse musician. And when I heard this new album, I thought, well, we're going to have it on the show. Tremendous.
Well done, John. Absolutely brilliant. It was recorded, actually. He's got his own studio, AOM.
Arm
Studios in Los Angeles. What's a Welshman doing living in LA?
Well, I'm actually going to post a link on the Indeed. I'm going to no sheep there. I'm going to post a link about the studio equipment and the stuff.
Yeah.
About the mixing of it and the recording of it on. It in was the like, notes.
When we were talking about it before, actually, the show, your eyes lit up. It was like you in a sweet shop. You were just going, no way. And the ribbon mics. And they did this. And they did that.
Yeah, it's
so,
great.
So, honestly, if you really want to know about some studio techniques and everything, right, especially in the Vibes publication, you go into great depth at times, don't you? And also,
I certainly do.
So, and also, we're on Master Chicken or Master Dom. We call it Master Chicken. But there you go. So, that album was produced by John Cale and his manager and exec music producer, Nita Scott. And Animal Collective featuring AV Tear and Panda Bear. Who? What? Yeah.
Well,
they sound cuddly.
Well, they were in the news recently because they basically couldn't afford to tour. Even though they're quite a very successful band in terms of, great alternative act. But they just couldn't afford to do it because of the costs associated.
Well,
incredible.
We understand that too, man. I mean, it's really tough right now touring just to try and balance the books and get everything out. I mean, we've been offered a date with the Starlight and Campbell band in France, and it's tough, isn't it? Because I don't want to go into it. Anyway, this album, which is John Cale's 17th studio album, features a load of collaborations from a drummer, Tony Allen, who was Fela Kuti's band, his head of music in Africa. Sadly, Tony passed away last year. And it also features Waze Blood.
That we had on earlier on the show.
Yeah, exactly. And to Fat White Family, so loads and loads of people. I love that. And I didn't realise before, but I'm quite intrigued about John Cale because he comes from Wales. And my nan was born in Miglamorgan in Pontypridd. And I was hoping that he also was born in Pontypridd, but he wasn't. He was born in Garnant, which is a coal mining village north of Swansea.
Well, there you go.
He studied at Goldsmith, moved to New York, founding member of the Velvet Underground, came back to the UK, was influenced by the Kinks, the Who, the Small Faces, and at the same time, he was shopping a crude demo reel, trying to get a deal for the band. And as a result, it went into the UK underground music scene. And the Deviants, the Yardbirds, and David Bowie all covered Velvet Underground songs, even before they'd released their own album in 67.
Didn't know that.
Bonkers.
Incredible. So, that's the end of the show for this week. We hope you can join us next time. Don't forget to check out our blog.
Vibes.
Vibes, which is vibes.starlight-campbell.com.
And our show now is being syndicated on radio stations all around the world. We're really excited. The Supertone Show. And I'll leave you with this. There are no rearview mirrors with John Cale. He's always moving. He's always been ahead of his time.